Welcome to Art Worlds. Today we're joined by Martin Kamala, a PhD researcher and creative director with a unique journey from animation to education. Martin's on a mission to reshape how young people connect with learning, blending design, anthropology, and tech to tackle the big question. Why does Gen Z feel so disconnected from traditional education? We also dig into Kenya's design scene and the need to move beyond just consuming knowledge and create something truly local and impactful. So sit back and let's dive into this thought-provoking conversation. Black and white or shades of grey?
Good afternoon. Today we are privileged to have our speaker, Martin, and our supervisor, Donna. My name is Rosemary Wairimu and I'm undertaking Bachelor of Technology in Design.
Good afternoon. My name is Mika Mitoko. I'm also undertaking the course design as we go through this interview. I hope you enjoy.
Good afternoon. My name is Kemuma Vivian. Also undertaking technology and design. I hope we have a great time.
My name is Donna Pido. I'm an associate professor emerita in the Department of Design at TUC. I finished my PhD in 1987, so I can kibitz a lot of whatever they're discussing here.
My name is Martin Kamala. I'm doing a PhD on modeling a learning method for students, but I'll explain more about that. But thank you very much, and I'm happy and looking forward to it.
We'd like to know about your life before lecturing, where it all began.
My father was a professor. My mother was a lecturer as well, a teacher, headmistress. My uncles and my aunties are all teachers. Even my grandfather was a teacher. My immediate family are all teachers. Why it's that way, I don't know. But as a young person, I knew I will never be a teacher. That's what I knew. So I got into cartoons and animation, and I'm a practicing animator. At that time in 1990, it was a new thing. Nobody knew what animation was about. If you go to the hotels and say you're an animator, they'll know you as a clown. So no one knew what an animator was. I had to educate people by talking to big prospecting clients, even just people who come and work with us. So by default, I started training. I realized that it was coming naturally. It wasn't forced. It was just coming. Later in life, I thought back, why am I in teaching? And I think it's because of that experience of being at home. Our folks were teaching, our relatives and our aunties and uncles were all teachers, and they spoke to us like teachers. I think that's how I got into it, just incidentally, not purposefully.
Can you tell us a bit more about your journey as a designer? How exactly did you decide to move into animations?
The earliest experience I had of animation was in 1967. I was 3 years old. I wasn't in this country, I was in England. We went to a movie house and we watched The Jungle Book. And it was an amazing experience. Of course, at three, I don't know what's happening. But my mom said that I forced them to watch it many times. So we had to go to the movie house many times, which I can't remember. It's my mom who tells me that. When I got older, and I was about 5 years old, I went back to the movie house and I saw other Disney movies. I was fascinated by these movies. It just fascinated me how a human being can look like this, talking with animals, doing things and walking, talking, jumping, dancing, stuff that is unimaginable. How is this happening? So I was just curious. That's, I think, how I got in.
Maybe tell us a bit more about your research.
The title of the PhD is Building a Culturally Adaptive Learning Model. It's to do with the disaffection of young learners with education itself. Just the way Generation Z is disaffected with the politics, Generation Z is also different with their education system. They feel the system is alienating. It is not speaking to their expectations. My PhD is on the boundary of three studies or three areas. It's at the meeting point of design, social anthropology, and computer science. One of the requirements of a PhD is that you come up with something new. The moment you say that and nobody's doing that, very many new things emerge straight away because you're at a point, a crossroad, where nobody really is doing work. And it's not just about the discipline. It's about the way of thinking. Computer scientists, for example, like all scientists, are very convergent in their thinking. They try to eliminate confusion and noise. They try to narrow down on solutions. Whereas the social scientists are the opposite. They're divergent thinkers. My own experience of education is cross-disciplinary. I first started off as a structural engineer. Then later, I moved into animation. Then much later, I moved into design. I don't see myself as restricted by the disciplines. So I cross over. The disciplines are there for their purpose. but I don't fit into that box.
Yeah,
I really don't. When they asked me to do a PhD, I wasn't interested. I never even saw myself as a teacher, never saw myself as a professor. At some point, it dawned on me, yeah, this can be a good thing to do. But in terms of topic, it had to be cross-disciplinary or transdisciplinary. So what I'm doing is a transdisciplinary study. Again, it's troublesome to the university because the university is in silos. The moment you're trying to cross, you're fighting with the university. I'm doing a PhD in, you could argue, design, but it's about education. And it's about building a system in computer science. So I'm in those three disciplines. For me, it's normal. These days, there's a lot more talk of cross-disciplinary, transdisciplinary, multidisciplinary studies. Cross-disciplinary has a very loose arrangement between the different disciplines. If all that's happening is you're studying, let's say, design, and you're borrowing from social anthropology, and you're also borrowing from, let's say, computer science, then you have a cross-disciplinary relationship. Multidisciplinary is when your study becomes something that is between all three of them. Transdisciplinary is similar to multidisciplinary. It's just that a new discipline arises out of what you're doing, and it has a distinct name.
So you choose your own modules.
If you want to fit now into the structure that's here, they'll tell you choose a department. That department is housed in a school, which is housed in a faculty. Right now, as we're talking, I'm housed in two places, in design, which is under FSST, which is the social sciences, and also computer science, which is in FAST, which is applied sciences. The way of thinking of the applied scientists and the social scientists, not the same.
Yeah.
That creates now what the university says is cognitive dissonance. What sort of research are you doing? Is it informed by the natural sciences or is it informed by the soft sciences, the social sciences? Those pathways are different in their approaches. So I keep on telling them in these presentations, I'm doing both.
Yeah.
So I'm at the meeting point of both. So you can imagine my computer scientist professor is always feeling that my PhD is too noisy. And when I'm with Donna, she feels maybe I'm too narrow. It's almost like you have to write two PhDs. Yeah. I've got two documents and I'm working on both. And the challenge is merging them in a way that would be acceptable to the social sciences and at the same time acceptable to the natural sciences.
You may not find any other anthropologists who will articulate the same definition that I'm articulating, but I see anthropology as the study of design. I have come to realize that the anthropologists are out there generating theories about what makes culture work, but the truth is that if you're studying anthropology, you're studying how people design their lives and their material culture and their organization. And I would love it if you would say something about right and left hemispheric dominance in the human brain.
It's a fairly well-studied thing. People who think more creatively, when human beings think like that, we're thinking with the right side of our brain. You find that a lot of the curriculum in basic education emphasizes left hemisphere thinking, which is all about this idea that the truth is only one, it's black and white, and that there is this other realm which is not speaking to truth. It's characterized by this kind of thinking. What's troublesome about it is that it makes a lot of assumptions that all knowledge can be packaged in this kind of way, that there is truth, and the idea is to discover truth through what they call systematic inquiry. It influences the sciences, the soft sciences, the natural sciences, the hard sciences, all of them, even engineering. But when you're educated in this kind of way of thinking, then you're also not educated in other possibilities, like the creative way of thinking. So if you're more interpretivist in your thinking, you look at things and you question them, then the left hemisphere dominance will not see that as serious. They'll see that as subjective. And they view anything that's subjective to be bad. You need to be objective because the truth is objective. That's the thinking. The problem we have in this country, and I think in many countries, is that left hemisphere dominance is controlling the narrative in education, so you end up with a bias in terms of distribution of resources. Nobody ever asks a Generation Z, so how would you like to learn? What would make learning interesting? That question has never been asked. So that's where I started. I decided to do an ethnographic study, which meant to sit in school again in Form 2 and just watch students learning. My research question was, how do students like to learn? And in the third month, towards the end of the first term, I discovered what it was. I stumbled on it. What I discovered was that young learners want learning to be participatory. They don't want it to be an isolating experience. It's very key. The moment you make it isolating, you disaffect them. So if I tell Micah, I'm giving you a learning activity, and also Rosemary, I'm giving you a learning activity, and you cannot talk to each other, You have to do this activity individually, and then I'm going to test you separately. That experience is the worst thing you can do for young people. The minute you change it and allow them to engage, so you learn together, and then at the same time you're tested together. The level of engagement, it is a multiplier effect. We know that when learners are heavily engaged in learning, it translates to higher grades. There's a positive correlation between engagement and results. Mm-hmm. But when they're learning together, how do you know that one isn't doing all the work? But then let's even go beyond that, because this whole new paradigm is changing everything. Why is it important that we need to measure your knowledge independently? Should we not be measuring your interdependent knowledge? Because what we're saying in the workplace, you need to have a certain level of codependence, and your ability to work in teams will determine whether they keep you on the job or not. That's stage one of my PhD. It has two stages. The second phase is to build an experiment that demonstrates that this is how learners like to learn. You see, my interest was to apply my research, not just to do basic research based on documenting what you find. Yeah. It was to develop something that can be applied in the context of industry. This is the design that I've produced to demonstrate that it's true.
I'm seeing that you are a creative director, and you also have a master's on interactive design media. For me, as a future interactive designer, I'm a bit skeptical about the Kenyan market and their literacy about interactive design. So what would you say about that?
It's a question I have to address with students a lot of times. I think it's helpful to make a decision based on your character type. If your character type is to play it safe, in other words, you don't want to take too many risks, then you would want to go with an established area of design. The most established area of design in Kenya is product design. But professionally, it's not well developed. The one that has developed is graphic design. So if you wanted a job, the jobs for graphic designers would be a lot more than the jobs for product designers. Environmental design is newer in the industry in terms of how it's flourishing and growing. Interior design is where we position it within this department. There are a good number of jobs for it. Government recognizes it. The only thing is interior design jobs go with the industry. If the economy is up, interior designers get employment because things are booming. A lot of construction going on.
Yes.
When the economy is down, interior designers don't have. Very true. So interaction design is you can say, an extension of product design because it has that user experience going on with the product. But interactive media in a digital realm is new. As you say, it is emergent. If you're comfortable forging the way, if that's your character, then you can choose interactive media. You don't mind setting your own rules because there are no rules. If you're comfortable with that, then interactive media works for you.
Could you share with us a story of a surprising discovery you made?
Mm-hmm. COVID came and suddenly we couldn't teach face-to-face. We had to teach online. Yeah. People were resistant to learning online. Not so much the students, but the lecturers. Only 30% were teaching and learning online. After COVID, that number dropped to something like less than 1%. So my PhD is asking, what happened that made us not capable of learning online up to this minute? So online systems implement a way of learning that is cultural. If you use Moodle, the learning management system, they implement models or learning methods that you find in the West. Many of those systems are counterintuitive for us. A classic one is you have to enroll for class. If I tell you to enroll for class, you might wonder what I'm saying, you see, because it's just not what we do. When you go in there, you have to learn in a ladder. So it presumes that knowledge is understood along this ladder, a very linear model. And it's a presumption. And if you try to change that, you can't. But one of the key things which is missing in all this is the participatory culture of learning. I remember talking to my professor in Manchester, and he was saying, no, but Moodle supports groups. It also supports forums where you can have discussions. I said, yeah. But if I told you something like, can students add knowledge to the curriculum so that now part of the curriculum is evolved by the learners? It's just not designed like that. Yeah. But that's what I mean by participatory. We are educated, I think, out of our minds. And that is the disaffection. When you don't allow students to own the curriculum and what they're studying and even be responsible, they don't even grow up to be responsible, because if you are mistaught, you see, you blame the teacher, you blame the school. But if you misteach yourselves, who do you blame now?
So how do you balance your research and other professional responsibilities?
I have to be rogue. I have to be seen to be the bad guy. When I come to the university, for example, I already tell them there are certain times I will not fit into, and other times I'll fit into. I wake up at 9 o'clock every day. I'm available for class after 10:30. Officially in the policy, classes start at 7. But if you want me to teach, it has to be from 10 o'clock onward. It can't be at 7. Yeah. But that seemed to be a rogue behavior. I have an animation practice. I don't take on jobs I don't like. I choose the characters I work with. I'm very picky about who I work with as clients, and I'm also very particular about the times that I work and also the jobs that I do. Yeah. I need something that is a challenge. It has to be difficult. There has to be very few people who can do it, so that when I'm doing it, I'm learning. Then I'll do that work. That's my character. I mean, now I'm old, so I'm stuck in my way.
Getting closer to the end, where do you see the design industry in Kenya leaning towards in the future, taking into account the recent development in our country?
I don't see the Generation Z thing as a new thing. Mm-hmm. When we were in school, we also went on strike. The only difference was that the constitution at that time favored the president. The president can kill us, arrest us, put us in jail for life, actually. And that was constitutional. All our student leaders, all the vocal people were arrested, they were put in jail for life, some were killed. Yeah, many of us were killed. Now there's a different constitution. The constitution's on the side of the students. So if you shoot one student dead, then you have a case. Yeah. And the case is against the government. What I see as significant is that Kenya allows ourselves to be consumers of knowledge. If a teacher is with you in class and you have to study something, the teacher has to have that knowledge and then share it with you. That's a consumer mentality where we expect to consume stuff that has already been prepackaged, pre-made, and there's no effort on our part to try to make something or to evolve something. So this is, to me, the most troubling thing. Because if you're a designer and you're having this consumer mindset, in the future, you're dead in the water. Even my colleagues, we would learn a 3D software to learn how to do 3D modeling. We'll go and learn another 3D software to learn more about 3D modeling, and then a third 3D software. We're constantly learning, constantly reading. It's not bad to learn and to read, but at some point, we need to translate that into producing. We don't have that. Partly because we also criminalize people who experiment. Now I'm in the area of computer science. Same thing. Everyone wants things to be made outside. They learn it, and then they use it. We need to move away from that because with AI coming, what are Kenyans doing? Consuming the AI. Whenever I give a talk on AI and ask Kenyans, have you made an algorithm which is Kenyan? People laugh. At least an algorithm that will produce an output that makes sense to Kenya. Because all these algorithms and heuristics around AI are implementing a cultural behavior. They're all biased according to culture. One of the positive things I will say about Generation Z is that they listen a lot more to local music. They also produce a lot more local art, and they share it amongst themselves. The problem that's there is that we don't reward it. We don't enter it into our education system. If you produce something new, that will be seen as not a useful thing. Mm-hmm. But if you reproduce what was done in the West, even if it was 100 years old, that will be seen as knowledge. As long as we remain consumers, we're dead.